Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbilly, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number one to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.balltalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, I'm revisiting by request gun violence, specifically this time to Philadelphia. Gun violence in the Philadelphia black community. By request, and I get it. There have been over 300 deaths by gun violence in Philadelphia, and it's just July. People, black people, are disproportionately represented as victims and perpetrators. I heard someone, maybe somewhere, somebody implied that Black Lives Matter, why don't they have the same, they have the same energy about black-on-black homicide as they do about police murdering a black person. Said that black lives only matter when racism is involved. Well, first, to those statements, which sound kind of, somebody that's pretty shallow making a statement like that. First, black lives do matter when racism is involved. That's an issue. And there has always been protesting to end violence in the black community and the Philadelphia community as a whole. That you can research it yourself. No one likes losing a loved one, and no one wants to be murdered. So black-on-black crime is not anything that the black community approves of. So that, and it's no reason to accept police murdering black people or racists murdering black people. All right? There are two different issues, right? The disproportionate instances of police violence and or homicide perpetrated on the black community and black-on-black crime are two completely different issues. First, the people who are being murdered by police pay taxes that attribute to the salary of supposed trained police officers. Not many people want to pay the person who is going to disrespect and take their life. Geniuses. People trust or hope that police will not kill them because they, the police officer, are afraid because they thought a cell phone was a gun, because you are selling loose cigarettes, because you passed a counterfeit bill, or they thought they saw a pretty cat. People are fearful when they interact with police too. So, you know, fear is just, that can't be an excuse. Everybody's fearful. There is a certain level of trust and respect involved when black people interact with police. That's why they stop when you pull them over. That's why they even give you the opportunity to talk with them, because you're a police officer, so it's got a certain level of trust and respect. Not going to do that for these gun-toting guys walking down the street with an AK. Nobody's going to, guy rolling by in a rimmed-up car with dark windows trying to do a drive-by. Nobody's going to stop for that guy, all right? And think that they're going to be and expect to be safe, okay? Death by homicide should never be the outcome of an actual non-life-threatening encounter. No one should attempt to explain that truth away, all right? So a cry for law enforcement to respect black lives is more than valid. So, you know, for these people who are trying to imply black lives don't matter under certain conditions. Not that we need to be concerned, but I hope they're not anybody in any high places that have to do with anything. Okay, because They're obviously not very knowledgeable people and not have not been around black families in the black community when people are murdered. Nobody likes that. As for not needing police, the homicide and crime rate says something different. We simply don't need corrupt, racist, fearful, or incompetent police officers or administrators. Those who represent the law or enforce the law are expected to obey the law they enforce. That's not rocket science. As you can see, we have enough people breaking the law and murdering to have to be concerned about falling victim to law enforcement. All right? We need police because we or some of us have not demonstrated the capacity to police our individual selves, let alone our community. We appreciate police for putting their lives on the line for the community and showing up when we need them in a way that we need them. Okay? If the answer is carrying a firearm, then we can expect more casualties. The presence of an armed society is indicative of a society that is in fear of itself, in fear of its own members. It may also be indicative of an arrogant, self-centered segment of society seeking power and infamy by any means necessary. I relate to that behavior to failure to thrive, failure to do right and succeeding to do wrong. Instead of becoming famous, they become infamous. That becomes the goal. Black-on-black homicide is a cancer that torments and haunts the black community. Make no mistake about it. You geniuses that think that it doesn't matter. Everyone, unborn, newborn, young, old, weak, strong, guilty, and innocent are affected. They are our people, our brothers and sisters, our children, our relatives, our friends, our neighbors, our mothers and fathers, ourselves. Regardless of the extenuating or aggravating social, economic, political circumstances, a percent of our population has chosen to sentence those they have conflict with or prey on to death. That death, homicide or murder, sentences the black community to tyranny, grief, fear, violence, injury, death, or incarceration. Revenge and retribution has yet to raise anyone from the dead. From the New York Post, they said one black person was killed less than every hour in America in 2020. What is inside of us, or what is missing inside of us that we cannot bring this self-perpetuating madness to an end? Wars have been fought and ended, yet this so-called peacetime hell appears to be claiming more lives. For our part in this homicidal, genocidal event, we are guilty. We have become victim and perpetrator. This affliction must end. It must end. And it must begin with you and I infecting the community with positive energy and support. Power to the people. Use the power you have. Right? Don't wait for somebody to do something for you that you could do for yourself. These are our people. From the HuffPost 2017, it said the violence from the Violence Policy Center. It said recently released a 10th edition of an annual study about black homicide and victimization in the United States, and they found that blacks represented 13% of the U.S. population, yet accounted for 50% of all homicide victims. All right? The National Review 2015. For whites, 77% of gun deaths are suicide. For black Americans, 82% died from homicide. The next interesting statistic that is that this high homicide rate comes from a population with a much lower rate of gun ownership. They're saying that the population, they said, listen to this, roughly 41% of white households own guns compared to just 19% of black households that own guns. So, you know, these are registered weapons, I'm assuming, because you never know how many unregistered, you can't track unregistered weapons, right? So 41% of white households own guns compared to just 19% of black households. In other words, when it comes to guns, white and black Americans live different lives. Wow. White Americans don't experience much criminal gun violence, but have much greater experience with guns. Widespread gun ownership doesn't lead to criminal carnage, so fear-based gun control arguments simply don't ring true. So, but they're saying, I guess they're saying that some of the white Americans don't think that we need to need gun control laws because apparently, according to this study, the people who own guns are not, they have more people that own guns, but less gun homicides. But that's not accounting for white people who have illegal guns, though. So that's interesting. From the Philadelphia News, Philly's violent year, right? They said nearly 500 people were killed and more than 2,200 were shot in 2020. All right? It's Philadelphia. Nearly 500 killed. The only time more people were killed in Philadelphia was in 1990. That was during the crack cocaine era, right? The city blames factors unique to 2020, like the pandemic and the economic havoc that it wrecked. So, you know, people didn't have jobs, things closing down, people So the police investigated a scene where a woman was shot in the arm in the 4100 Black or block of Mantua Avenue in West Philadelphia one day. That's one of the shootings that took place. That's one of the lucky ones. She got shot in the arm. For just the second time in history, Philadelphia's annual homicide total threatened in 2020 to reach 500. That's 2020. We're not even talking about 2021. A number of people killed last year were, and this is really basically 500, 499. The number of people killed were 499 as of late, as of the day that they gave this account. So it might have, I don't know, it might have reached 500. I don't even know. It's 40% higher than 2019 and more than in all of 2013 and 2014 combined. more people killed. Last year, in 2020, in Philadelphia, than in 2013 and 2014 combined. Almost reached 500, too. But that's close enough to 500 to me. I get it, it's not 500, but that is too close to 500. The only time more people were slain in the city was 1990, as I said, where there were 500 homicides as violence surged along with the crack cocaine epidemic. Spike in shootings were even more pronounced. More than 2,240 people were shot since January 1st, 40% more than police had ever recorded. 40% more than police have ever recorded in this city. As in most years, the vast majority of victims were young black men, many from impoverished neighborhoods, lacking resources, and long afflicted by gun violence. This is a cycle, right? Many black men from neighborhoods that are experiencing a cycle of gun violence and death. Gun violence, incarceration, death. Gun violence, hospitalization, loss of limb, of capacity to move up to full capacity to use your body, right? All of that kind of stuff. We don't really cover the people who survive these gunshot wounds and are left paralyzed, partially paralyzed, or whatever, disfigured or what have you. But there's more to it, and I'm not going to get into all of that because I'm not. Because you know, I mean, if you live in Philadelphia, you know what I'm talking about. You've seen the carnage. If you've seen war, then you know what I'm talking about. They said, but shots also killed and wounded children playing on the street. A pregnant woman was struck, forcing an early delivery of her baby. So what we have is a very volatile. It's not the first time people have been struck by stray bullets. I'm not even suggesting that. I'm saying that there's much, much more of it. And it seems like less concerned about who suffers. You know, nobody seems like these guys don't, you know, have little concern about shooting these weapons of mass destruction, war, made for war. AK is a war weapon, 40 caliber. That's a military grade weapon. Those 40 caliber handguns. So, you know, AK, the AR-15. I don't know if they still use Uzis because they're pretty inaccurate. I don't know if they use them. It's like a crowd kind of like gun. But some gunmen fire indiscriminately into block parties. This is kind of the environment we are trying to live, trying to survive in Philadelphia. We have all of this indiscriminate shooting. They say a witness was shot dead near City Hall and what police believe was a targeted hit for his testimony in a murder trial. So we got guys that want to murder without impunity and will kill to stay out of jail. That's a big problem. That's, and that is just putting it lightly. This is a tyranny. They said homicides and shootings soared all over all violent crime, right? All the crime, right? Violent crime, homicides and shootings were the most, right? All the crimes, right? Which also includes of rapes, robberies, and aggravated assaults, right? Even though a shooting is an aggravated assault, also they're saying it, but gun violence basically soared over the rest of the types of violence that occurred in the city and the rest of the types of crimes that occurred in the city. So homicide is up. All other crime is down. Homicide by gun or assault by gun is up. All other types of crime were down in comparison, right? So we're not satisfied with any crime in our community because we want a crime-free community. We would like that, and we would like definitely like a homicide-free community, a place where your kids can play outside, and when they come in the house, their knee is bleeding because they skint their knee on the ground, not because it's a bullet in their leg, okay? That's what we're looking for. There was a disproportionate number of young black men that are being murdered by young black men. Unfortunately, young children, women, pregnant women, anybody can fall victim to this war. Because the battleground is the neighbor, it's the community. And it seems like there's not any lines being drawn, shooting into block parties, gatherings, homes with that I think they shot 50 shots into a house, a graduation party. 50 shots. Could everybody in there be targets? Mayor Jim Kenney and Police Commissioner Danielle Outlaw and District Attorney Larry Krasner said they believe a combination of factors unique to 2020 contribute to the spike in gun violence. They pointed to the pandemic increasing stress and desperation for people in already struggling neighborhoods, right? Officers being pulled away from their regular neighborhood patrols to help monitor protests and respond to pockets of social unrest. COVID exposures forcing further staffing adjustments, a series of trust-shattering episodes by the police. They did some, I think, one incident during a riot, a girl, a mother, and her infant child and her young relative turned down Walnut Street, and the police basically beat the hell out of them. They just happened to turn down behind the police who had a mob of people in front of them at 52nd and Walnut. They beat the girl up out of the car, grabbed the baby, put something on a website about the baby. It was incredibly stupid for law enforcement, you know, because it's a young lady driving a car. You stop the car, you just turn your vehicle, go in another direction. I don't know why nobody did that. If you watch the video, it's a frenzy, beating, knocking out the windows, beating the kid up, beating the lady up. So, no, nobody's going to trust police when you act in that way. They use tear gas and rubber bullets on protesters. They throw that further eroded law enforcement's legitimacy in the city that has long struggled with the issue, which is true. So we have this relationship with law enforcement that's not good in Philadelphia, which Needs a lot of work. Many city services that function as checks and against gun violence, or at least alternatives to the street, were also significantly disrupted last year, right? Criminal courts were all but shut down for months. That means I got a gun charge. I got some criminal stuff going on. I'm a gun. I'm still on the street. You know, maybe they might were, when I got in front of the judge, they might were going to keep me, but I'm on the street, so I'm still doing my thing. Other things, more things, you know, whatever. I think we had a situation where a guy was bailed out. Got bailed out of jail, and he killed the guy walking his dog down there in Brewery Town. Guy was just walking his dog. The probation parole system struggled to operate regularly. Schools and recreation centers closed, right? Many jobs disappeared and programs and businesses shuttered, right? So it's been a hell. It's been rough for everybody, right? So they feel that that might have caused an increase in gun violence. Personally, I think that that might have had an impact on some of it. But once you kill somebody from another clique, gang, or organization, family, or I don't know how they're doing it nowadays, that revenge factor kicks in. And then, so you kill one of them, they kill one of you, then it starts going back and forth like that, you know. That factor, factoring in that. And we have an ongoing issue, you know, that's out of control, really. This is out of control. 499 homicide, gun homicide. That's just gun homicide. And some of those people are people who are innocent in terms of the conflict that might lead to the gun play, right? Police also point to the proliferation of guns on the street. Somebody's making sure that a lot of weaponry, this type of weaponry, like I said, military grade, 40 cals, 15s, AKs, who knows what else they got, you know, who knows. I heard something one night sound like a cannon going off. I didn't know what that was. And it was very, it fired rapidly, very loud. They logged in more than 2,300 arrests for illegal firearm possession last year, double the total from 2015. Pennsylvania State Police, meanwhile, said the state conducted nearly 1 million background checks, right? For legal firearm purchases, 50% more than usual, right? It's not clear how many were in Philadelphia, they said, though. Other forms of routine policing and citywide in the city were impacted in 2020. Total arrests fell by more than a third compared to 2019, so arrests falling. They're saying that contribute to criminals being on the street and crime and gun crime, right? With drug arrests cut nearly in half and arrests for violent crimes down 20%. Some of that is likely due to policy shifts outlawed temporarily implemented, in which officers were told not to immediately apprehend suspects in minor drug-related offenses, trying, you know, to avoid potentially spreading the coronavirus in the community or the city's jails. So they was trying to stop moving people around, spreading that COVID-19, right? So some people got a break. Outlaw did say that the morale was plummeted amongst rank and file officers, not only because they had to continue difficult and sometimes dangerous work in the face of a deadly disease, but also because many have perceived widespread calls for systemic reform as criticism of their service on the force. I don't know what's wrong with criticism, especially when we have when you have something to criticize. So we're not children. Those of us who are doing the job, she said, she's quoted as saying, we're human beings too. And I think it would be foolish to even believe that doesn't have an impact on how motivated you are. Outlaw said in an interview, we come and we do our jobs, absolutely, but is everyone going to continue to go above and beyond knowing that we're under so much scrutiny right now? We don't know at what point a mistake becomes a misstep or something that can't get punished. I don't know what Outlaw means by that, because that is perplexing to me, since they have procedure and training and certain things that you, the police officer, should not do. So I don't know what she's talking about right here. So that is a fact of life for everybody. No one knows at what point a mistake, right? Misstep, or whatever you want to call it, becomes a misstep or something that can't be, that can be, get punished. Nobody knows that. We step out of the house, we don't know. Nobody knows. Nobody's planning that. Police are trained in a way that that kind of thing should be very, very rare. And it's too much of that going on. And really, that's not a good look coming from the Philadelphia Police Commissioner. I know she's trying to support the police and everything like that, but you have to be real. You can't just support police and excuse the behavior. Can't do that. George Floyd wasn't a mistake. Eric Gardner wasn't a mistake. If you consider it a mistake when police murder, it should be considered a mistake when civilians murder. We can't. That what we gonna do? That what we headed? We headed to that? We don't know, you know, because civilians going to court. Oh yeah, well, you know, I was trying to do this. We can look. Is there a difference between a police officer and a civilian? Because I thought that thing called training made a big difference. And when you do something that's not that you're not legally authorized to do, then you should be held accountable. Like choking a guy to death, using a stranglehold on a guy, and see, especially a guy who you're trying to physically subdue because he's selling Lucy cigarettes. Are you kidding me? Or putting your knee on the neck of a man who's handcuffed behind his back. Look here, police should be jumping on that kind of thing. There are some police shootings that occurred that nobody complained about because the officers responded appropriately to a lethal threat. An officer going above and beyond does not mean breaking the law or violating the rights of the civilian. Police are not doing us a favor. They are supposed to be performing a job. Taxpayers pay them to perform. It can't be a mistake when a police officer murders or assaults, and a crime when a civilian murders or assaults. Civilians are people too. Come on now. Everybody is subject to the law. Mistakes are punishable. Training and accountability are vital. So I don't know what the outlaw was meaning by that statement, because it seemed like it just didn't look at the big picture. It just looked at police. So she was just making a statement about police. I heard what she said, but she should have said more than that. You know, I would like to think that police presence serves as a deterrent to crime, particularly assault and homicide. I can recall a man being murdered, a block away from where a police SUV was stationed. External deterrents have no impact or little impact on the internal desire or need to kill. This monster, this need or desire to murder must be destroyed from the inside of the soul of a man. That's where this thing has to be. This war is fought in the soul. We're fighting for the souls of people. You have to fight for your own soul, your brother's soul, your sister's soul, your neighbor's soul. That you have to help them fight for their own soul, because this is an internal battle as much as it is an external battle. We see it acted out externally, but it's an internal war, a spiritual war. Anyway, a national problem, as you know, it's a national problem. This thing's going on everywhere. New York, North Angeles, Chicago, Washington, blah, 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 blah. This thing is being duplicated all over these major cities, all over this United States. As a friend told me, when you see something occurring repeatedly, it's not a coincidence. Criminologists generally believe that the pandemic, which has disproportionately impacted on communities of color, has intensified existing structural factors that lead to violence, such as concentrated poverty, while also disrupting law enforcement and social services designed to respond to crime. Right? The national homicide spike hit its peak in June and July, they said, after Minneapolis police killed George Floyd. The protesters across the country demonstrated against police brutality. A similar widespread homicide spike occurred after the Michael Brown was killed by police in Ferguson, Missouri. They call it the Ferguson effect, which widely debated and controversial, they say. In the face of protests and criticism, had grown wary or even defiant about being proactive in trying to prevent crime. Well, guess what happens when you on a job and you're not doing your job? What should happen? Another theory regarding residents' confidence in police after high-profile killings has also since garnered attention, he said, right? So they, to see George Floyd killed, murdered, broad daylight in front of people telling that, what's that guy's name? Telling him, you're killing the man. Telling him, get off his neck. Like, he's a police officer. And he had his hands in his pocket like he's waiting for a corned beef hash sandwich. And he's on a man's neck who says he can't breathe, who's losing consciousness. That's not going to build confidence in the police. All right? That thing that happened in Philadelphia where they beat the young lady out of her car. And the teenager that was with her and took her baby during the riot, that's not going to build confidence in Philadelphia police. I wonder what happened regarding that situation. I heard the girl was beaten so bad she was pissing blood. Why? It was people that they could have actually fought in front of them. Why the girl with the baby and the teenager and the in the SUV, why did they get the beat down? Okay, so that doesn't help Philadelphia police, you know. So I'm sure there's some good cops, but he could have been out there that night, because I didn't see, you know, that thing went on for a minute. They was beating up the car. If I ain't know, it looked like a gang beating up another gang member that came through in the car. That's what it looked like. Except for this gang had on blue with badges on and nightsticks, and, you know. But it looked like that type of situation. It didn't look like no cops would do something like that. Anyway, there's good research to suggest that there's a highly publicized killing like the one that we saw exacerbates mistrust in poor communities of color. You think? That's just the one that the world saw, which leads to some to withdraw from law enforcement, even take the law into their own hands. Ooh. That's a contributor to gun violence. You don't trust that the law is going to do anything, so you take it into your own hand. There are such individuals that do that. Likewise, other cities filled up with violence crisis truly took off at the beginning of June, immediately following the 3 days otherwise better to George Floyd's death, right? Before June, the city had not recorded more than 180 shooting victims in a month in at least 13 years. But from June through November, at least 200 people were shot every month. What? From June through November, at least 200 people were shot every month. That can't be right. Police statistics show an average of nearly 8 people per day. The violence accelerated in neighborhoods that have long grappled with gun violence, such as Kensington, West Philadelphia, Nice Town, and North Philadelphia. Krasner said summer could have been the moment when the near-total shutdown of social services and alternatives to gun violence collided with warmer weather and other traditional drivers of violence, such as long simmering feuds, right? Suddenly allowed to play out on the streets where witnesses, like everyone else, stayed home in the pandemic lockdown, right? Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Kasner said, a lack of witness appearing in court has been the biggest reason for some illegal gun possession cases. Some illegal gun possession cases have failed to end up with a conviction over the last several years. Could it be that death is the consequence for appearing in court, and could it be that the police are unable to protect these witnesses? Because as I previously said, they said a witness was killed outside of court. This trend, people blamed on the skyrocketing gun violence in the city, right? Just 1 in 6 of last year's shootings that resulted in a suspect in custody. 1 in 6, the Inquirer reported that. So why do you think people are not testifying? This is what I'm saying of how things can just get worse. Because not everybody wants to go out and murder somebody, kill somebody. But there are people who will kill to protect their family members. You know, it's the same as these guys killing, protecting their homies or whatever, amigos, they click, or their gang, whatever they're supposed to be a part of. Same way they do that. Families do that also. So that is that could be a major, another contributor to gun violence. It's just making it worse. The police inability to protect witnesses. So why would they testify? Why would they come to court if they're going to either have to kill somebody or be killed? Or somebody, these guys nowadays, they seem like they shoot, they don't even care who they kill. Innocent people, witnesses of somebody walking down the street, somebody playing jacks, hopscotch, if they still do those type of things, they have no regard for life. Back to the story. Outlaw and Kressner has said that their agency have rolled out new ways to work more closely together throughout the year. And the city said it is committed to continuing anti-violence strategies that involve more than law enforcement, right? Balil Qayyum, and I'm sure I said his name right, Qayyum, the longtime anti-violence activist in the city, said he remembers rallying against shootings when annual homicides in Philadelphia reached 500 victims 30 years ago. So they've been marching for these geniuses that have been saying black lives don't matter unless it's racism. This man's been marching. He marched 30 years ago. Many of the issues then were the same as they are now, he said. Young black men living in neighborhoods with limited opportunities or hope resort to crime or violence because they see little other choice. As I said previously, when we talked about violence in the black community, this gun violence thing, that one judge said that the couple of dozen of cases he had, the reason for a lot of the violence was basically went down to the respect. Somebody was disrespected some kind of way. They felt disrespected, and voila, it resulted in somebody losing their life. You know, so if that's a ongoing theme in the black community, so if that's the expectation, then when you get in an argument with somebody, you automatically gonna want to go get your gun, or you're gonna automatically want to have your gun on you. So when you do get in that argument, when they pull, you pull, and y'all get to pulling together, get to yanking at each other, shooting each other up, shooting up the people in the neighborhood and things like that, because your feelings were hurt. I get it about the respect and all of that, but it's not a death sentence. You don't want to, do you really want it to be a death sentence because somebody disrespected you? You want to sentence them to death? Then do you want the state to execute you for sentencing somebody to death? See how that goes? Or do you want somebody to execute somebody, one of his friends, to execute you? Because when you execute someone, you could look for someone to come to execute you because you executing someone. It's not even self-defense for one of you. It can't be. If you just, I don't like what you said, take this, you dirty rat. Come on. That's not a death sentence. And we need to stop thinking like that. We need to stop feeling that way. We need to exercise those demons. And I'm not being spooky about it. I'm serious. We need to exercise those demons. These brothers need to be exercised because that demon is killing. It might as well be a slaughterhouse in every black urban community, where these brothers just line up and you know, to be slaughtered, because that's about what it looks like. So you have a group of folks who have been excluded from opportunities in society. They're in their own neighborhood with no hope. The negative behavior plays out on the people closest to them, right? So basically, these guys having a tantrum, grown folks, they're too old. They're not 2 year olds anymore. They're young men having a tantrum, upset. So if you need help, cry out for help. Don't kill nobody. Nobody has to die because you need help. Try to get some help. taking a life is not going to change anything. I haven't seen nobody come up from that either. Who's coming up? How are you coming up from being a killer in the neighborhood? What kind of come up is that? Walking around with four, five, six bodies. Where's it come up? Who's paying you to do that? How much money you making to do that? You want to be a gun? We have the United States Marines, and the Army. You want to get paid to go to war? We have a place for you. But you got to be disciplined. You just can't do what you want to do. From Fox 29, 2021. They said the latest data from the Philadelphia Police Department shows a 32% rise in deadly crimes in 2021 as the city logged over 300 homicides. 300, it's just a lot. Over 300. I don't even know how much it is. Steve, you listening, how many is it? Where we at, Steve? You listening to the show tonight? How many homicides Philly up to now? I know you always had those numbers. Anyway, we over 300. At the rate we're going to be at 600 come December. We're going to be over 500. The sharp rise in deaths comes from a year after the city saw nearly 500 homicides in 2020. Now, I always look at that number. Last year, 500 people were, 499 people, right, were murdered. That means, let's just look at half of them done by, there's 200 people involved in 499 murders. That's 200 people looking to kill. Somebody might be looking to kill. And he got friends, right? He got friends. So this thing just swelled. I wouldn't be surprised if every year until everybody just kill themselves off that feel this way, this thing will swell up until it gets to a point where, all right, everybody's in jail, right, or dead, or in a wheelchair. They can't really do anything. And maybe that's the way it's going out. But I'd hate to see it go out that way because these brothers, we need standing erect, perpendicular. We don't need brothers running around thinking that it's okay, you know, to murder people, to just shoot indiscriminately in parties because there's somebody in there you don't like, to shoot down a street where people live because you want to kill somebody, to shoot at someone hiding behind children or hide behind children while someone's trying to shoot you. That's never okay. So it was 499 last year. I can kind of see why it's so many this year because revenge, to get back, is, you know, it's going to happen unless you didn't kill off the opposition or they've been incarcerated. Then that might bring it down some. But until then, this cancer is going to spread. From the city of Philadelphia in 2020, Philadelphia lost, they said, 447 people to gun violence. How the city addresses gun violence, 2021 update to the roadmap to safer communities. So the city has a plan to address violence in the Philadelphia community, all right, which is good. But I'm still saying, brothers and sisters, you must have your own plan. You are raising these people. These people come from a woman, a man and a woman, the union of a man and a woman. These people were once children. They are somebody's child. We must raise up a nation of men, not monsters. We must raise them up to know the difference, to respect life, to respect each other, to learn to use their words to deal with any differences they have with anybody. I don't know if there is a bar. Well, we need to create a bar, an ethical, moral bar. Put it in place, just like they put in place, it's cool to wear your pants down. Hey, how about we put another bar in for that? You know what I'm saying? It's cool, all this stuff that people are doing. It's cool to run red stop signs. It's not cool to do that because you put your life and the life of somebody in the community in jeopardy. So how about we start raising the bar, creating a bar? If we don't have one, let's create one, and let's make that fashionable. Let's make that part of the culture. Let's put respect really high up on the ladder. All right? If somebody disrespects you, it's not a death sentence. That doesn't make sense to me, because you disrespected me, you have to die. Because I know you wouldn't like, same people wouldn't like for the police to gun them down for disrespecting the police. You made me chase you. You disrespected me. I told you to stop. You saw me. You ran. So when I caught you, I killed you. You don't want the cops to do that because you disrespected them. We can't kill people because of disrespect. Hell, we wouldn't have a country. We wouldn't have a neighborhood. Talk about disrespect. Talk to people. Raise people in a way that they respect other people. And maybe 10 to 20 years from now, we have a different, I don't even know about that. But is that grandiose thinking? I don't even know. Because maybe if it's, scriptures say train a child in a way he should grow and he will not go astray from it. You know, once he learns what he's supposed to do, that's what he basically, that's the road he'll follow. He won't veer off that road too much. He'll be on that road. He knows if he goes right, what's going to happen. He knows if he goes left, what's going to happen. Right? He says, there's danger here. Don't go there. So you're teaching them that. Don't go where danger is. Okay, I don't want that. That's not good for them. That hurts him. Oh, I'm not going to do that to them. I'm going to respect them. That's their property. Okay, I'm going to keep it moving. You know, we just need to get back to the basics, if you ask me. Internally, we got to exercise some demons, some ethical, moral demons, spiritual demons. And I say start with your youngins. Now, you know, people, I don't know what some of you young adults, some of you guys need to come in out of the rain, because I see some young adults out there, they seem pretty, they don't have the boundaries of that a young adult should have. Let's just say it that way. And we all need to observe boundaries and have respect for everybody. But we, in doing that, we should know that's not a death sentence, right? So Philadelphia has some things in place in delivering critical preventions and interventions. They say there are four key goals: connected and thriving, roadmap for safer communities, connected and thriving young people, strong community engagement, coordinated city services, safe and healthy neighborhoods. In 2001, we will strengthen the public health approach that has guided our work for the last 2 years. Have better opportunities in social service for individuals highly at risk, more quality of life services for communities, swift and predictable consequences for those engaged in violence who do not want help. You guys, this is the city saying, hey, you have a chance to turn it around. That's what I'm getting from that. You do not want help. He said, if you want some help, see us. Right? Stronger community engagement with tools to increase long-term resiliency. Right? Key initiatives in the roadmap. Right? Gun violence is a complicated and complex problem. In order for the city to effectively address and stop gun violence, the roadmap to safer communities coordinates public, private, nonprofit, and community partners to end gun violence. Right? These programs and initiatives and interventions work in concert with each other to help the communities, right, and individuals affected by gun violence, as well as directly interact with those perpetuating it. So they offer an assistance, right, an olive leaf to you brothers, to you guns out there, all right? So you don't have to stay. You don't have to continue with the violence. They're offering you, hey, the olive branch, come on in, get some help. They ain't asking you to confess to nothing. They're just asking you to change. Group violence intervention. With group violence intervention, they have high-risk individuals are called into a meeting and are told a simple message. The violence must stop. If it comes, if it continues, every legal tool available will be used to ensure they face swift and certain consequences, okay? They're making you an offer you can't refuse, all right? They're offering you help, but they're telling you, we are going to come after you with everything we have if you don't stop, all right? They say individuals are simultaneously connected to social services, employment, community support to assist them in changing their lives. Since its launch in August 2020, they say 36 people have used its supportive services on their way to choosing a different path. 36, 6, 3, I don't care. That's a good thing right there. Any life that you can help save is a good thing. This model led to a 35% reduction in gun violence in South Philadelphia in 2013 and 2014. And the most successful of these programs have reduced violent crimes in cities by an average of 30%. So they're going to give you something else to hope for, something else to cling to, all right? Something to help you do something other than whatever madness you are participating in the streets. I said, if you don't have a record, join the military. You want to go to war, join the military. You lack discipline, join the military. But be ready to submit to discipline. Community Crisis Intervention Program. This is another. The CCIP is a violence prevention strategy that uses credible messengers from neighborhoods vulnerable to gun violence to engage and disrupt violence by reducing tensions and mediating conflict among those most likely to be victims or perpetrators of gun violence. All right, that's good. I always thought we needed mediation in the community. Hopefully you get it before somebody is actually murdered, because it's hard to mediate, harder to mediate a homicide. People's blood boiling and they're really into their feelings. But, you know, there's a lot of shooting going on in the neighborhoods, and That is excellent right there. So, since its launch, the CCIP made 3,866 home visits and responded to 910 incidents. Its teams have connected victims and their families with needed services and support while building relationships with at-risk men and women with the goal of reducing the likelihood that they become a victim or perpetrator of gun violence. They got another thing called Operation Pinpoint. So the police department's Operation Pinpoint identifies a small number of blocks in the area that have become violent hotspots, right? It uses data and intelligence to adjust its law enforcement approach in that area, all right? Frequency of foot patrols. It includes frequency of foot patrols, location of cameras, partnerships with community leaders, all right? I just show that comes on TV. I like Chicago PD. I don't know if they had foot patrols or not, but I noticed they had this partnership with these people that are leaders in the community. Eldermen, they call them. And they're very entrenched in the community, and they work with the police. They're very politically involved also. They use cameras all the time when crimes are committed. They look around for cameras and stuff like that in their police work. So I guess they put some cameras up to video crime. But it don't seem like this group even cares about that, because like me, I have plenty of video. People on video committing crimes and they don't even care. Like, in 2019, shootings were down 15% in pinpoint areas, and citywide shootings were up 5%. So these areas that they're saying that this pinpoint, Operation Pinpoint, worked, it had an impact, a 15% impact in areas that they are targeted. In 2020, with COVID complicating the implementation of these initiatives, shootings were up 44% in pinpoint areas compared to 2019, while citywide shootings were up 54%. In 2021, Operation Pinpoint will expand citywide to 45 areas covering 8.5% of the city. All right? So that sounds good. So I mean, we have the city, your tax dollars are going to be working towards, according to this, have been working towards addressing violence, some prophylactic intervention, some interventions, mediation, which is good stuff, and it gives them a stern warning to, hey, we know who you are. To guys that are actually doing that, we know who you are. We give you opportunity to stop. If you don't, we coming to get you. You can't argue with that. That to me, that's good stuff. You know. Environmental change, they said changes like fewer blighted buildings, clean and abandoned lots, better lighting, increases the sense of safety in the neighborhood and the connectedness amongst neighbors, and reduce the locations where illegal guns are stored and where illegal activity occurs. You know how some people squat abandoned homes, turn into a trap house, prostitution. Or some people even rent the property out to addicts, you know, stuff like that, you know. So I guess you could hold drugs there, you could hold guns there, you know. In 2019 and 2020, 160 properties were cleaned up and 1,046 unsafe buildings were demolished or cleaned and sealed in focus areas, all right? So getting rid of the blight, As they say, bike contributes or supports crime and criminal activity. Targeted community investment grants, right? Targeted community investment on grant program backed community-based violence prevention activities that support public safety and build a stronger sense of community. Over the last 2 years, this initiative has funded a total of 129 projects with an estimated combined award of $1.9 million. 80% of the participants in the funded projects said that the program made them feel safe in their communities. 96% felt the program gave them an opportunity to build more trusting relationships in their community. Okay? Trust is a very important thing to have in any relationship. If you don't trust the brakes on your car, you're not going to drive it. Right? So imagine not trusting the people in your community. So that's a chaotic community who's not going to be able to drive the energy of the community anywhere because they're going to be bumping heads, you know, crab in a barrel kind of like thing going on, just all over, just chaotic, no direction, right? Sure, some people get out. Some crabs get out of the barrel. Building on progress, they said, in addition, highlights from our gun violence prevention network in the last 2 years that we'll continue to build on. Interventions focus on before violence occurs, okay? And as I said, before violence occurs, you got to focus on that child, that baby, that newborn. Raise him. And I'm not saying you raising no chumps. I'm just saying, raise your child. Violence is the last thing for you to do. That's self-defense. You don't need violence because you don't like somebody or he talking to your girl and all that. That's no need for violence. You're jealous of somebody. He got to go. He got to leave the planet because you jealous. No. All right? Be a man about it. Injury prevention program. They got this program called. They got a lot of programs here. I just thought the last time I talked about that, I didn't talk about any programs. So I failed to do that. So Philadelphia will be a very specific programs in effect. Have been in effect. And, you know, I just took the opportunity tonight to review them. So, you know, if you don't remember, you can call up and see what, you know, ask for help. Injury prevention program. Philadelphia Department of Health established its injury prevention program in 2019, focused on reducing and preventing gun violence. It recently launched an injury prevention dashboard to provide up-to-date data on violence, accidental injury, and the social determinants of health that are linked to violence. Social detriments, I meant, of health that are linked to violence, all right? This will help improve decision-making and coordination across agencies taken on the violence crises, all right? Raise your child. I'm just going to keep saying that. That's one way you could chop this thing out, cut the legs off of this thing. Raise your child. Teach your child. Instill. Reward your child for doing good things. And reward don't always have to be the latest video game. It could be a hug. It could be like, hey, good job, good job, Khalid. Good job. Reward them. Have a little something in the community. Rewarding, children moving forward. It also leads to firearm, homicide, and national or non-fatal injury review team, right? They identify opportunities to prevent firearm violence and death, though through in-depth case review of victims of violence. That sounds like Melvin Floyd right there. I don't know if people remember Melvin Floyd back in the gang where they used to come around driving a coffin on something in the car. And, just had pictures of people murdered, stuff from the gang war days, trying to get people to stop gang war. Their touch points with the city and provincial agencies, meetings review 4 to 6 cases in depth, identifying patterns and creating action items for change. So they're not just talking to you, they're helping you come up with a solution, what you can do, right? Action. You see this, like I said, you see some guy talking to your girl, that's not a death sentence. First thing you need to understand, you need to control is you. And if you think you can control that guy or your girlfriend, you lost your mind. You can't control neither one of them. Control you. Control your feelings. All right? No need for nobody to die because of that. You know, we got a lot of silly things that we do. Come to the neighborhood, guys come to the neighborhood, you want to beat them up. They ain't from the neighborhood trying to talk to our girls. They're all our girls. We all brothers and sisters. And we don't own them. And we not married to them. Sisters, use your time wisely. Do not set brothers up for conflict like that. You're involved with a brother, especially you know you got a hot head. Worst thing you could do, have another guy come around your house, and you know you got one of the hottest young dudes from the neighborhood that's on your tip. Advocacy for strong laws, they say. I don't know about strong laws because we already got laws against murdering people and carrying guns and stuff. We don't need more laws. But they keep making more laws for, I don't know, but we got enough laws. Let's follow the laws that we have, use the laws we have and go on in. But they say they got advocacy for strong laws. The critical tool for ending gun violence is stronger gun laws. You already got laws. You got laws against straw purchases. You got laws against stealing guns. Laws against having a gun and in certain circumstances you don't have a license or you have a certain situation of in terms of the law, criminal situation. We got laws. Use the laws you have. They keep writing all these laws. I don't understand it. Stronger gun laws. Like, if it's illegal for a person to sell guns on the street, find that guy, put some boots on the ground, do some undercover work, find him, and make that a very risky business that the people don't want to get into. They got to go to these gun shows, do some undercover work, make it not worth their while. The Kennedy administration continues to work with local, state, and federal partners to reduce the availability of firearms and close loopholes that enables guns to fall into the hands of those likely to engage in violence. I don't know what those loopholes are, you already had laws. You're supposed to give a gun to an ex-felon, even though that leaves ex-felons who are of law-abiding citizens, but naked. They can't defend themselves against people with guns, which is, I don't know. I'm not sure about I get it. You got a guy that's using a gun. He can't use a gun anymore. I get that. I said, but also leaves him, after he served his time, he's butt naked. Reduce unnecessary involvement in the criminal justice system. This is interesting right here. And I'm about to lose one out of time, but this is a, what I call break, big break, because if you mess up on one of these, the police-assisted diversion diverts those with low-level nonviolent offenders away from the criminal justice system to a supportive peer-based social services, right? Juvenile expedited release program allows youth with minor allegations to be released quickly after arrest instead of being held in cell. The Youth Arrest Reform Project develops procedures to encourage police and prosecutors to consider diversion to services instead of juvenile court. Well, this is not a get out of jail free card, y'all. This is a break. And if you come back after that, I can imagine the axe is going to fall down on you. So I only got 3 more minutes left. I'm trying. What else we got? Intervention focused on responding during violence. Better condition for safer surrender of violent offenders. The Joint Warrant Apprehension Task Force brings together public safety agencies to pursue the city's most violent offenders, ages 16 to 34. I say take that age off there and just get the city's most violent offenders whose whereabouts were unknown, with the goal of stopping future violence. The 2-month pilot resulted in the arrest of 7 high-risk individuals and recovery of 3 illegal firearms. And so coordination with Attorney General to target illegal guns, right? Interventions for after-school violence has occurred. They launched the Office of Reentry Partnership and Enhanced Connections to Services. The Office of Reentry Partnerships, the ORP, was created to organize reentry efforts directed and get ORP directly engaged over 600 people to provide reentry information, support, referrals for those who have returned to the community from incarceration during the pandemic, right? So there's a whole lot. It says the Welcome Home Hotline and Emergency cash transfer program and emergency transitional housing during the pandemic. They had some things, right? In 2001, they were redoubled their work with these tools, investigating a total of $18.7 million and additional funding of the FY22 on anti-violence efforts for a total of $35.5 million of investment. So there's going to be a lot of investment into anti-violence, y'all. So, you know, I just want to say, save the children and try to help the other people save themselves. And the city is investing $35.5 million. Let's get off the pot. We'll piss. Until next week, y'all, each one reach one, each one teach one. Stop the violence. Don't let the violence stop you. Peace out, y'all.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials, because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in 4 parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia.
revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Report from 29 District. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life.